translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A learned, thoughtful person must realize that material existence is illusion. This is possible only by self-realization. A self-realized person who has actually seen the truth should retire from all material activities, being situated in self-realization. Please repeat, a learned, thoughtful person must realize that material existence is an illusion. This is possible only by self-realization. A self-realized person who has actually seen the truth should retire from all material activities, being situated in self-realization. Purport. By an analytical study of the entire constitution of the body, one can surely come to the conclusion that the soul is different from the body material constituents, such as earth, water, fire, and air. Thus, the difference between the body and the soul can be realized by a person who is thoughtful. Manisi or Muni. And after this realization of the individual spirit soul, one can very easily understand the supreme spirit soul. If one thus realizes that the individual soul is subordinate to the supreme spirit soul, he achieves self-realization. As explained in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there are two souls within the body. This body is called Kshetra, and there are two Kshetragyas, or occupants of the body, namely the supersoul, Paramatma, and the individual soul. The supersoul and the individual soul are like two birds sitting on the same tree of the material body. One bird, the individual, forgetful bird, is eating the fruit of the tree, not caring for the instructions of the other bird, which is only a witness to the activity of the first bird, who is his friend. When the forgetful bird comes to understand the supreme friend who is always with him and trying to give him guidance in different bodies, he takes shelter at the lotus feet of that supreme bird. As explained in the yoga process, dhyana vastita tadgatena manaso pasyanti yam yogi naha. When one actually becomes perfect yogi, by meditation he can see the supreme friend and surrender unto him. This is the beginning of bhakti yoga, or actual life in Krishna consciousness. Om Agyanti Medandasya Gyanajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Svapritam Dudbhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Tadanti Swam Badantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, here's the actual retirement plan. One doesn't have to retire at a certain age. One can retire at any time. And that retirement is from the activities of material life. That's what it says here. One should retire from all material activities. And one becomes realized that this is actually the only stage when one actually can understand that all material activities and all material, what we say, desires and desires and activities ultimately lead simply to to the results of what we say suffering, bondage, and rebirth in the material world. In other words, according to this verse, one is acting in illusion. So there's that verse. What is it? Come out of the darkness into the light. Tamasi mam jyotir gama. Yeah, tamasi mam jyotir gama. So the Shastras not enjoin, but strongly state this is the way to follow life, is to get out of the illusion. And how is it done here? Prabhupada goes into a very long explanation of the difference between the body and the soul. And he uses the soul as a bird. The body is the tree. And as a bird sits on the tree, it's the inhabitant of the tree. It eats the fruit of the tree and sometimes makes the tree its house. And that tree becomes everything for that bird. But actually the bird is not the tree and neither is the tree the bird. They're two distinct entities. But in this analogy, there is another bird who's sitting in that tree also. And this is very important to understand. Sometimes we forget that Krishna is also sitting within our heart. We know we are there within this body, but Krishna is also there in his manifestation as Supersoul. So everybody is sitting, or not only sitting, but is standing, living right next to God at every second. So we say God is actually the closest thing to us, and that is factually true, because in the heart, or on the heart, we say, on the heart, there are two entities, the soul and Krishna, or the Supersoul. So we are never alone. We are always with God at every moment. But just like you can be with somebody and not be with the same that person at the same time if you don't pay attention to that person. So in the same way, not paying attention to God means we forget that God actually is there within us. And what is he doing? He's not interested in what we're interested in. He has a different program. Or his program is to get us out of the illusion by giving us guidance and, what we say, protection. He protects us and he also guides us. And what is that guidance? He's constantly speaking to us within the heart. And Prabhupada says that the super soul is constantly giving directions to the soul at every second. But to hear that direction, one's mind has to be somewhat controlled and peaceful. Therefore, Prabhupada quotes that verse, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajitam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are actually devoted and worship me with love, I give them direction directly. In other words, Krishna in the heart directly gives that person direction, one who worships with devotion. And then he goes on to explain the next word, Tesham eva nukam partam aham vijnana jamtam aham nasyayam yatma bhavasto jnana dipena basvata. That I'm dwelling within the heart and I'm destroying all the illusions. I do it. You can't destroy the illusions. But you can get the illusions destroyed when you take shelter of me. So Krishna is actually destroying illusions from within. And of course from without as the spiritual master. Both entities, the guru and the Lord within the heart, are acting on the same platform. Guiding and directing the living entity back to his eternal constitutional position of devotional service. Which is the only reality of one's existence. Therefore, as explained here, all material existence is simply an illusion. But we can see it. It exists. It's not that it doesn't exist. Material life, material energy does exist. It has substance. It has, what we say, forms. It exists. But the illusion is it's not what it presents itself to be. That's the illusion. It's different. What we see and what we get is different. Or what we perceive, let's use the word perceive instead of see, what we perceive about material energy and what we get from it is the illusion. What we get is simply disappointment or frustration, unfulfilled desires, and ultimately suffering. So that's the illusion of material existence. It is like, we might say, if you ever see smoke flying in the air, of course we all see smoke, we see it in incense. Or if you try to grab smoke, there it is, you can go for it. And then you open your hand, where is it? It's not there. You see it, you grab it, and then you open it, and it's gone. Well, that's material life. You can see it, you can actually go for it, but when you look for it, for what you perceive it's going to give you, it's something different. What is it, that difference? It causes you to forget your actual position. And what is that actual position? To render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And not just what we say part-time. Part-time simply means suffering. Or it's like trying to mix sand and sweet rice together. Therefore, to fulfill our real need within the heart, one has to engage in devotional service 24 hours a day. We don't say 18 hours and 6 hours for sleep. We say 24 hours. Because that's the acharyas use the same terminology. That devotional service must be constant. How do you develop a constant mood of devotional service? Therefore, Prabhupada explains, by practicing the given sadhana and a very determined effort every day, one becomes fixed in that and one develops from there. Just like when you plant a seed into a fertile ground and you water it with nice water, and then you take care that there's no, disturbances caused by animals or weeds that might grow up. You carefully prune and, protect that plant, and then gradually it becomes a full-blown tree with nice fruits on it. So in the same way, that by constantly engaging in devotional service day to day, regularly engaging in devotional service day to day, we can develop that constant mood of devotion 24 hours a day. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms this. He says, by chanting every day, one will chant always. So in other words, through the practice of everyday chanting, after some time, then it will become constant. So it's in fact, as Prabhupada said, devotional service is simply practice. And then, but in the meantime, or during that time, one has to understand truth through philosophy. And what is that truth? Is that one should not try to look towards material activities to find satisfaction or fulfillment. Material things can be fulfilling when they're connected to Krishna. Then they're no longer material. Then they're spiritual. Whether it's your home, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, manaso deho geho yo kichu mor arpilu tu alpade nanda kishore. He addresses Krishna as Nanda Kishore, Krishna. And he says, my home, my wife, my family, my very body, my possessions, everything, it's yours. So his whole life has become spiritualized, although he's a grihastha with so many responsibilities within society. He is a big magistrate. He's getting a lot of prestige from that position, and he has a lot of responsibility. He also has a huge family, but at the same time, he knows everything is simply the energy of Krishna to be used in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada uses that example, or Bhaktivinoda, as the example of the ideal householder who had so much, but at the same time was detached from all of it and used it all in the service of the Lord. So that is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, nothing becomes material in that sense. So how to do that? And Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita, what is that verse? 3:9. Who knows 3:9? Loko yamakam abandanaha tadartakam akunteya muktasanga samarchera. That work done for the sacrifice of Vishnu must be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to the material world. Perform your duty for his satisfaction, and that way you'll be unattached and free from bondage. So in that verse, in the purport, of course the verse says that one has to perform activities for the pleasure of the Lord. But in purport, Prabhupada says to do that is a science. And that science, or that art, he uses the word art, not science. He says that art is taught by the spiritual master. That art is taught by the spiritual master. One should receive the directions from the spiritual master how to use everything in the service of the Lord. And then one is free from what we say the effects of everything material. Although one may have so much. Look at we in our Shastras we have the example of people who are great kings, surrounded by so much material opulences and responsibilities, but yet were pure devotees. King Prithu, King Yudhisthira, so many other kings. And then we also have those who had actually nothing. Kolavecchar Sridhar, banana salesman. Both were equally in pure devotional service. Why? Because they were completely detached from everything. So we don't have to change our position. And that's not the program. Nor Prabhupada says you have to. You simply have to spiritualize your life and use everything in the service of the Lord. And by practicing the process of devotional service and taking careful guidance from the bona fide spiritual master, then one can become successful in this process. And Prabhupada goes on to say that success begins, or devotional service begins, when one surrenders to this. He says in the very last, this is the beginning of bhakti yoga. What is it? Why is he saying beginning? He says beginning means surrender. Until the living entity is surrendered, there's really no real beginning. There's practicing to begin. Just like we say, we take initiation. On the initiation ceremony, we make our vows, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, agree to chant at least 16 rounds every day on beads for the rest of my life. That, Prabhupada said, is the beginning. We might have been doing that for 4 or 5 years or 2 years or whatever time before then. But then, now you begin. We're practicing to begin. So devotional service begins with the process of surrender. But surrender is not simply something you agree to and then it's all over. Like, okay, here you get a contract, you know. Just like when you buy a house, you might have to sign a contract. So that contract is binding. So it's not like that. Surrender is a moment-to-moment, what we say, process of accepting the instructions of the spiritual master as one's, what we say, life and soul. Using the spiritual master's instructions and applying it in everything we do in our devotional service. Now, sometimes we find the spiritual master and Prabhupada would sometimes be asked a question about a practical situation. And Prabhupada would say, use your intelligence. Use your intelligence. So he may not say what to do, or even in devotional service, he may not tell you exactly how to carry out your service. But by taking shelter of the spiritual master, one gets the intelligence to carry out the instructions. And that is as good as the instruction, that intelligence. And that's what Srila Prabhupada wanted. He wanted independently intelligent devotees who can think how to surrender and how to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. Not, well, of course, in the neophyte stage, we are learning how to surrender. But then again, to stay neophyte means to be miserable. Neophyte means one who is simply struggling to perform the activities. We have to come to the second class platform. What is the second class platform? Four stages or four categories of activities. One worships the Lord with devotion. The Lord becomes all in all in our life. Everything is centered around pleasing God and His spiritual representative, the spiritual master. Two, one makes friends with other devotees. In Nectar of Devotion, it says, one should make friends with like-minded devotees. Devotees who are similar in nature, we can develop close friendship with and have friendly relationships with all devotees and have friendship with devotees who are similar in nature. That's usually how it's understood. to preach or to be an instrument to give Krishna consciousness to others. In other words, to see that in order to progress in devotional service and to ultimately please the spiritual master, I have to be an instrument for his mercy also for others. Whatever way that could be. You can do it through cooking, through art, through cleaning, through preaching, through accounting. It's not a matter of what service it is. It's the mood that you perform the service in. If you're in that mood of performing your service for the benefits of others and for the glory of the Lord or the pleasure of the Lord, then that is actually the mood of preaching. Seeing yourself as an example for others in whatever you do or as an opportunity to serve others. It doesn't matter what the service is. And the last is, of course, to avoid those persons who are mimical, atheistic, and who are against the process of Krishna consciousness. In other words, envious persons who are actively opposing. So these are the four, what we say, characteristics of a person on the second platform. And Prabhupada said, this is where our movement functions, on the second platform. On the neophyte platform, it's miserable. All you do is you're struggling somehow just to keep yourself engaged in devotional service. And you find fault with other devotees. You're always complaining about this or this is not right. This is not, he's not right, she's not right, that's not right, this is not right. In other words, the mind is always, what we say, restless and unsteady. And always looking for satisfaction through the senses and the mind and in the intelligence. That's the neophyte platform. The neophyte platform sees their own devotional service as the most important and everybody else is as okay, or even a botheration sometimes. So that's neophyte. We use the word neophyte because the word fight is in there, and that's what neophytes like to do, fight. They usually argue with other persons. Advanced devotees don't argue. They just perform their devotional service. That's they may argue with the non-devotees in order to encourage them in devotional service, but they never fight about this or that. So that these are the different stages or different characteristics of the second class platform. So strive to reach the second class platform. And that can be done by cultivating these attitudes and the mood of surrender and service. This verse is very instructive. And of course, as Srila Prabhupada also said, a fundamental prerequisite of making advancement in devotional service is that one has to be convinced that there's no happiness in this material world. Now, Prabhupada said, if there's any happiness in the material world, it's in Hawaii. So if you're not in Hawaii, don't worry about it. If you're in Hawaii, you might be in trouble also. So he used that statement to somehow illustrate that this material world is somewhat miserable, but sometimes it gets a little nicer for a while. But you might go to Hawaii, and a lot of Hawaiians are not happy. So the point is that one has to be convinced. Now, we might be convinced that, yes, there's no happiness in this material world, according to what I've experienced so far. But I haven't experienced everything, so maybe there's something there yet that I haven't experienced yet that could bring me happiness, you know. We may also dream like that, or not dream like that, but consider. And one may be faced with a situation where there is such material attraction that one starts to think, well, this is actually nice. What if material means that which is not connected to our devotional service? That's all. Either relationships, objects, or situations, or thoughts that are not related to devotional service is simply material. And therefore, there's no real what we say, what's the word? Results of something positive that'll come from that. One cannot get anything positive from the material energy. That's the point. One can only get more and more bewildered, or what we say, more and more struggle to somehow. That's what the non-dhan devotees do. They're always trying to rearrange the material world, material energy, to make it work according to their understanding. So they're always moving from place to place, switching relationships, getting new possessions, thinking in different ways, reading books on self-help and how to do this and how to do that. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Ki Jai Gornitai Ki Jai. So that is like shifting seats on the Titanic. You all know the Titanic, right? Nice boat. It actually started here in London and went across the Atlantic. It was supposed to land somewhere in the North America. And so many important people in the world wanted to go on the first voyage of the Titanic. I think it was 1914, something like that. 1911, maybe. Not sure the year. Anyway, thousands of people went on that boat. It was huge. And it had a deck, and then it had other levels where, you know, the inhabitants could be. So when they were sailing, finally, of course, it went off course and hit this iceberg, huge iceberg. Now, when it hit the iceberg, or when it was about to hit the iceberg, the people on the bottom saw it first. The people on the top were still dancing and having parties. They were still, you know, doing their thing, but the people on the bottom started to realize we're in trouble. So you might think, well, I'm on the bottom, I'll just go on the top. It's better there. That's material life. Switching positions in material energy to make it better. The whole boat went down. The top two. So the point is that this is the way material energy is. No matter who you are, no matter what your situation is, you're going to die. And you're going to be disappointed with life because you have to give up everything you worked for anyway. So that's material life. So one who's convinced by knowledge, don't be convinced by experience, because there's a lot of too many things to experience. Be convinced by knowledge. In other words, a first-class person understands things by hearing. A second-class person understands things by experience, and a third-class person never understands anything, even after hearing and experiencing anything. So we want to be first-class in the sense that, as it says here, material existence is simply an illusion. And so therefore one cannot find happiness in illusion, just like one is eating bananas and standing in front of the mirror and thinking, oh, those bananas in the mirror are really nice. You might see somebody else eating the bananas in the reflection. You think, oh boy, let me grab that banana. It looks real, you can see it. But that's the nature of this world. It reflects the reality, but in the reflection there is no reality. It's simply a reflection. So this world is a shadow for our existence in the spiritual world. And Prabhupada said that. Just like someone asked Prabhupada, is there any snow in the spiritual world? Prabhupada said, yes, but it's not cold. So what he's saying is that in the spiritual world there's no misery. We're coldness is a type of suffering or discomfort. In the spiritual world, there's no such thing as misery or discomfort. So everything is there, but it's in perfection. So that is actually our existence. So although we have a body, we're in the body, and along with our being in the body, we are also with Krishna. So the whole process of devotional service is to turn your face towards the Lord, or turn your attention towards the Lord, by chanting the Lord's name, by offering Him beautiful prayers, by hearing about Him, by chanting His glories, by remembering Him, by serving Him in different ways, by offering nice prayers, by developing friendship with the Lord, by serving His lotus feet. And the nine processes of devotional service are all different ways, and one can come in contact with Krishna directly. And coming in contact with Krishna means coming in contact with yourself. That's the point. We become self-realized when we take shelter of the Supreme Self, who is Krishna Himself. Self-realization without Krishna is simply a temporary situation which causes one to again fall back into the material world. The jnanis, the yogis, and the tapasis can reach a stage of freedom from all material suffering, but unless they engage in devotional service, they again fall down into this material world. But a devotee is always with Krishna in every situation. Therefore, for a devotee, no material situation is unpleasant. When Chitraketu was riding on his airplane, after having been, what we say, freed from all material activities and attachments, he came across a grove where there were so many sages sitting together. And amongst the sages, there was Shiva. And Shiva was sitting in the head of all the sages, and his wife Parvati was sitting on his lap. Chitraketu laughed. He laughed in astonishment. How is it that Lord Shiva, who is, you know, one of the controllers, he's sitting in the midst of all these sages, many of them are yogis and sannyasis and others, and his wife sitting on his lap. How is that? He's not setting a good example. He wasn't laughing because it was unusual. He was thinking, this is not a good example for such a powerful controller to be sitting like that. Shiva didn't say anything. He just kind of just remained equipoised. But his wife, Parvati, she became upset and offended. And she took issue with Chitraketu. She said, You are even more intelligent than Lord Brahma and Narada Muni and many of the other great sages who are sitting here. You are so great. In other words, you know more than them. They're not saying anything, but you are. That's what she said. So in other words, first she rebuked him and then she cursed him. Therefore, because of your offense to Lord Shiva, you should go to hell. When she said that, he got down off his swan carrier and paid his obeisances and said, Mother Parvati, thank you very much. I'm on my way to hell. When Shiva saw that, he was astonished and he was amazed. But then he started to understand, this is the glory of the devotees of the Lord. For them, heaven and hell are all the same. Why? Because they're fixed. Just like a compass is always, what we say, organized, or what we say, synchronized towards the north. So in the same way, a devotee, whatever situation they're in, they remember Krishna. They're somehow or other engaged in devotional service. And he said that famous verse, what is that verse? Lord Shiva's famous verse he spoke. Tuyarta? Huh? Narayana paraya, Narayana parasya, na kuschastit na vidyati, svalpam apavargasya tuya artha. He glorified the devotees of the Lord, saying that devotees of the Lord, for them heaven and hell is all the same. Now, Prabhupada writes that Chitraketu had the power to nullify that curse, or at least to overturn that curse. But he didn't. He accepted it as the mercy of the Lord, and of course later he became the demon Vritrasura, who was killed by Indra and then went back to Godhead. But later on, this is really kind of funny, Shiva starts chiding his wife Parvati. He says, you know, you're very beautiful, and you have so many good qualities, but actually he's more beautiful. His devotion is overshadowing your beauty and all your good qualities. Shiva started to glorify him in front of Parvati. Then Parvati was a little bit embarrassed because she had... But this was the arrangement of the Lord, for him to take birth as a demon and go back home in his next life. But the point was, and it's a very essential point, that the devotees don't look for a material situation. They simply think how to serve in whatever situation they're in. And if Krishna changes their situation, they do the same thing. That's all. So we can be happy or we can be satisfied simply by engaging in our devotional service, whatever it is. As Prabhupada said, all devotional service is simply on the transcendental plane. There's not one service that is better than another, in that one is performing service for the pleasure of the Lord. So therefore, one should always be satisfied to serve the Lord to one's best capacity in whatever situation. And remember the Lord, remember the instructions of the spiritual master. And when one becomes fixed, and this is the point, and this is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter, one becomes fixed in devotional service, one can hear Krishna within the heart. Krishna speaking. I think this question was asked by Prabhupada. How do we know whether we're hearing Krishna within the heart or not? I think the example was that the loud voices you hear within your mind and heart is not Krishna. It's that soft, sweet, gentle voice within the heart. The loud voices are the false ego. Hey, satisfy me. Come on, what are you doing? I'm waiting for that sense gratification you promised me. That's the loud voice. But the soft, sweet voice is, chant Hare Krishna. Make me the object of everything you do. So that voice is there, and when one becomes, one's mind and senses are controlled. It says that in the Gita. Was it sixth chapter, verse number 7? Who has the 6-7? I remember the numbers, but not the verses. What does it say? Translation? The same. So when one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already. In other words, when the mind becomes peaceful by becoming fixed in devotional service, and one can only become peaceful when they give up the desire for sense gratification. As long as there's still desire for sense gratification, the mind can never be fully peaceful, because that desire will always be reoccurring or reawakening within our existence. So one has to be convinced that there's no happiness here in this material world. Someone said to Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, what about the mode of goodness? In the mode of goodness, we understand there's happiness. Yes, Prabhupada said yes, but also in the mode of goodness, there is knowledge. And that knowledge teaches you there's no happiness here. So Prabhupada defeated that point. There may be some relief. I mean, ignorance is suffering. People in the mode of ignorance, they're suffering constantly. What is it? Intoxication, sleep, distress, anxiety, so many difficulties. The mode of passion is the illusion of happiness. One is working hard and getting sense gratification, thinking I'm happy because I'm getting sense gratification, but struggling very hard to maintain that, and also experiencing distress at the same time, a mixture of some material pleasure and happiness. On the mode of goodness, one is feeling a little peaceful, has some knowledge, one likes poetry, art, music, one likes philosophy, but it's taking one away from one's goal of life. And what is the goal? To love Krishna. It's diverting one's attention towards objects that are, what we say, ultimately leading to one's unhappiness. So in all three modes, we can understand there's no real satisfaction for the living entity. So one has to engage in sudasattva, a devotional service. And that devotional service begins when we surrender to the Lord. And how to surrender to the Lord? There's a statement. If you make this statement, you'll go back home, back to Godhead. You would like to hear the statement? This statement will guarantee you going back to God if you keep that promise through your whole life. My dear Lord, from this day forth, I'm yours. That statement was made by Lord Brahma, I think. My dear Lord, from this day forth, I'm yours. Do whatever you want with me. And continue with that mood all the way through. Huh? Vibhishan, the brother of Ram. Ah, thank you. Okay. Vibhishan made that statement. From this day forth, I'm yours. He had to surrender to Ram. Okay. Any questions? Comments?